Welcome to Critical Issues Commentary, the podcast ministry of Gospel of Grace Fellowship, a non-denominational Christian church in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. This is Jessica Kramus, your host for this series. I'm speaking today with Bob DeWay, Gospel of Grace's teacher and theologian and author of Critical Issues Commentary. Bob, you have a new article out. It's called Enneagram, Pagan Mysticism Promoted as Christian Growth. Before we get into the topic of the Enneagram, will you share with us the four C's that you included in your conclusion?
Yeah, after reading these three books, we got the best three books that Amazon claimed were on the topic of Enneagram.
Yes.
And after reading them, I thought about how convoluted it all was. So I thought of four C's to describe this. We'll talk about it, and I think you'll see it actually is. Here's the four C's: complex, contrived, confused, and convoluted.
Oh, wow. Well, this should be interesting.
Well, that's what made this whole project not very pleasant, but it was so necessary because people are really interested in this, and they don't get the theory and stuff. I don't think most of these people I am holding here, the Enneagram, a Christian perspective, Richard Rohr, who's a liberal Catholic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably the number one promoter of this whole thing.
Yes.
So here's his book. I read every page. As you can see, the corners are turned over, notes are taken, paper clips on
paper. He's got a whole stack of paper clips throughout this book.
Yeah, and all of my books here. Mm-hmm. So I read that. Then I read this Huritz, who's promoting this and being promoted by evangelicals, including a local one here in the Twin Cities. And then this Cron, and there's some co-authors, Stabile, and so on. So it is so convoluted. It's unbelievable. But when I see some of the videos that are out there, we just recently looked at one. Jessica sent me one. By the way, Jessica's my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she sent me a link to one that was a convocation for Liberty University.
Right.
And they were promoting this. Well, they make it sound like this fun thing where you find your number and then you figure out what kind of a person you are.
Right.
So the pop version that these unsuspecting students are getting, they don't just tell you all of this stuff of where this came from, what the theology and philosophy is behind it. They sort of hint at it. And so I dug deeply into it.
Yeah.
And I don't think they'd get anybody to sign up if they had to read Rohr's book and then take a test on it.
Right. Well, and the interesting thing with that, too, I watched Richard Rohr giving a message called The Enneagram, The Discernment of Spirits. In his introduction, he makes the comment that he's been asked to speak at universities and businesses and all these different places who want to use Enneagram as a personality test, like you just described. You find your number, you understand yourself. His claim, based on his own work, is that you cannot make this a personality test. It is inherently spiritual.
Right.
He says it does not even work as just a personality test.
Right. But that's what is the hook. And that's what I say in my article. We're talking here about Critical Issues Commentary, issue number 138, summer 2019. We've also turned this into a booklet that's available for Kindle on Amazon.com for 99 cents.
Yep.
Because this is growing.
It is.
This whole movement. And hardly anybody understands what it is they're getting into.
No, they don't. Before you started writing this article, and we were starting to hear about how it was coming into a local Christian university here, I had joined a Facebook homeschool group. And as all the moms were introducing themselves in this group, every single one of them, except for myself and one other lady, were saying, I'm an Enneagram 5. I've been married for 10 years. I have so many kids.
So that's how they identify themselves.
It is very much their identity.
Okay, so if you're listening to this and you've heard these numbers bandied about, maybe you even got into it, we're hoping to convince you to run.
Yes.
Because this is really wicked. Honestly, it's a rejection of evangelical Christianity completely. Everything, dear listeners, that you've been taught, if you're an evangelical, about God, his relationship to his own universe, Christ, salvation, sanctification, the end times, final judgment, everything, they do not agree with what we believe. Not in any of this. And so this is a rejection of Christ and the gospel. Don't listen to this talk about Christ, because they have a different Christ. And we'll prove that.
Yep.
So I'm hoping to get people to think about this and find out what this is about. Because it's a hook. The personality thing, oh, it's kind of fun. I tend to be this way. I tend to like these sort of things. I tend to want to be whatever.
Right.
And then I'm attracted to somebody, if you're somebody's dating or they're married or whatever. They're looking at relationships, or my boss is this way. That's not what this is about. This is about rejecting the gospel and adopting a pagan worldview.
It is. And it's a different gospel. It's a gospel of self. It's a yes. gospel of finding your own God within your own self.
Right. The number one thing I saw in all three of these books, which I copiously read every page, and I got all these notes. You should see how I did that. I didn't want to do this, by the way.
No, he didn't. It took a little coercion.
Jessica wanted me to do it, and our pastor, Eric Dalmo, wanted me to do it because he ran into this. And so I did it.
Yep.
And it was a labor of love because it actually happened after the ice was off the lake.
Nothing interferes with fishing.
Now I'm glad I did it because this is so important. They're all saying the same thing. You're on a journey to discover your true self, capitalized.
Right.
Okay? The true self is the pristine inner self that was goofed up by life. So we're not dead sinners, according to this theology, but we're godlike beings that have to discover that by getting rid of all the garbage.
Right.
And when you get back and you finally find this true inner self, that's how you find God.
So that's actually a good way to lead into what we really need to talk about in this session, and that is to lay out what is traditional Orthodox Christian theism. How would we define that?
Okay. Let me deal with the important things that you need to know in Christian theism. Number one, the triune God of the Bible, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, existed from all eternity as God.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, before creation, only God existed. And so God is not immanent within the creation. He's transcended to it.
Okay.
There was no creation at one point. The creation is finite. God is infinite.
Right.
God is omnipotent, omniscient. And one of the most important ideas, and we need to get this in our vocabulary, is non-contingent. Now, that sounds like a big word, but it's a concept that I will explain, and you have to get this, because the God of Enneagram is contingent.
Okay.
The God that the Bible teaches is non-contingent.
So any eternal creator God who existed before the creation cannot possibly be dependent on the creation.
Exactly. So God is not dependent upon, nor is his nature influenced by, anything outside of himself.
Right.
God is sovereign over all things. And so contingency, which all created beings are.
Right.
Okay. There are a lot of things that are necessary for us to exist.
Mm-hmm.
But God did not need, and nor ever has needed, and never will need, anything outside of himself. He created out of his own eternal decree and decision to create.
Right.
So all created things are contingent on the creator the creator is contingent on nothing. If you say that much, Richard Rohr's out the door.
Yes.
He will not believe one word you're saying. This hurts. He's gone.
Okay.
He's a panentheist. He won't listen to you. Kron, gone. All of these people that are teaching it, they're lying to you. They're not evangelical Christians. They've denied the faith. They have a different God.
Wow.
Either that or they don't know what these guys are saying. And if they're really evangelicals, how could they swallow all of this and not realizing they're rejecting everything Christians have believed for millennia?
Right.
I don't get that.
We cannot reconcile these two positions.
No, because panentheism is what this is. So we're talking about what we really do believe.
Right.
Okay, so we have an eternal triune God who created everything out of nothing. He's non-contingent. He's perfect in all of his divine attributes. And he's not dependent on his own creation.
Okay.
And he's always transcendent to the creation.
Right.
Okay, then there's other things that are important, like the doctrine of providence, the fall, the original fall.
Okay.
So God created Adam and Eve. He created the whole universe, created the Garden of Eden. And we see that in Genesis 1.
Right.
He created humans in his own image, male and female. He created them.
Yes.
Okay. And they rebelled against God at the enticement of Satan, who was already fallen. And they plunged the whole of their descendants into sin and darkness.
Okay.
And that means alienation from God, transgression of God's moral law, being spiritually dead.
Right.
My article explains all this.
Yes.
One of the things I did in order to try to keep some sanity in this is I kept going back to the gospel and Christian truth interspersed in the entire article or the ebook, if you got that version of it.
Yes.
So they don't believe these things. What do they believe? They believe in panentheism.
Okay, panentheism. I remember one afternoon about 10 years ago, I had been having a conversation with a friend who was dealing with the work of Anne Voskamp. And we were trying to figure out how to articulate panentheism. And more specifically, and my question to you that afternoon was, how is panentheism different than omnipresence? So please explain to us what panentheism is and how that's different from God being present everywhere.
Okay. Panentheism is an ontological statement.
Okay.
Ontology is the study of being. Okay. So panentheism is talking about the very being of God in his divine essence.
Okay.
Which they say is integrated as part of the whole creation.
Okay.
And there is contingency. And even God is evolving in this process.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so everything is part of this whole spiritual and moral evolution in panentheism. Omnipresence is a spatial statement.
Okay.
It's not an ontological statement, although it's ontologically true that God is omnipresent.
Right.
But God's presence everywhere doesn't mean he's dependent on the creation or contingent to processes within the creation.
Okay.
And so those are two different ideas.
Got it.
Okay, so the reason if I go here, if I go there, the psalmist said, there you are.
Yeah, where can I flee from thy presence?
Yeah, God's always there. We don't have to worry about getting in a cave and then God can't find us there.
Right.
But God's availability spatially doesn't imply that he's somehow limited to the creation.
Right.
Because Richard, God would be who he is before there was any creation.
Right.
So God being in everything is how they promote spiritual, moral, and social evolution.
Ah, I see. So Richard Rohr actually says in his article, God as Us, Week 1, the divine DNA is in everyone and everything that God has created.
So there's an ontological statement.
Right.
It's not spatial. Spatial applies to us.
Mm-hmm.
So God condescends to interact with us in a spatial manner and describes things in a spatial manner, because that's the only way we can know and think.
Right.
So when we speak about above or beneath, I was just preaching on that from Ephesians.
Yes.
Jesus ascended above all things, high above the all in the Greek. So here you have Christ's transcendence above all things. But we're limited to space, so God speaks to us that way.
Right.
I'm here, I'm with you. Okay? That's a relational statement.
Okay.
To the Christian.
Right.
Above all things is a relational statement to Christ's power over the all. And it's to comfort us that he's with us and nothing can separate us from the love of God.
Right.
But they're taking these statements and turning them into an ontological statement about God somehow being tied up in the creation and part of the processes of creation.
Right.
And not ultimately sovereign over the creation.
Okay.
So that would be considered heretical by any Christian theology that has anything to do with the Bible and what it says about God and his relationship to us.
Is there anything else that we need to talk about as it relates to traditional Christian theology before we move on and discuss the Enneagram?
Yes. There's one more thing, and it's really related to this whole panentheism we've been talking about. And they do believe in moral and spiritual evolution and the evolution of consciousness.
Okay.
There's an entirely different view of history between panentheism and biblical Christianity. My book on Emergent, I dealt with all of this because they're all panentheists.
Right.
And so Enneagram is panentheist.
Okay.
So we believe, I believe, that Christian theology teaches that history is linear.
Okay.
Okay. And I was talking about that, about the creation of the world out of nothing. So in Christian theology, which is derived from the Bible, God created the world out of nothing. And so there's a beginning. History, as it relates to humans, begins in the Garden of Eden.
Right.
With the creation.
Okay.
And then really the whole universe has a beginning.
Right.
In the beginning, God created.
Okay.
All right. So history is linear.
And it's heading towards?
Judgment.
Right.
Okay. So as history moves on, there is a judgment at the end. God allowed the fall. God provided a means of salvation, even in the midst of the fall, where it talks about the seed of the woman.
Right.
I talk about this in my article. But there is history where people are either believing God's promises and finding salvation, are rejecting God and staying in their sin. And in the end, there's a final judgment.
Right.
However many categories you have in the meantime, now that's debated and disputed.
Yeah.
But we did a whole series on eschatology, so you can listen to that.
Right.
So in the end, ultimately, there's a great white throne judgment. The devil and his angels are thrown into the hell.
Okay.
Everyone whose name is not in the book of life are consigned to hell.
Wow.
And the righteous live with Christ for eternity mm-hmm. in paradise.
Yeah.
All right. Now, that's the end of history as we know it. And then it goes on into the eternal state of affairs.
And that's what Christians have believed
this
all
isn't
along.
New.
Right. This is the gospel. This is the gospel itself.
For millennia, cite creeds that say these things.
Yeah.
They may not believe the creeds, but they at least cite them.
Right.
Okay. When I grew up in church, I was in a liberal church, but at least they had the creed.
Right.
Then later, when I got old enough to ask, the pastor didn't believe there was a hell. Why don't they take the creed out of their thing?
Why do we have to stand every Sunday and say that we believe this if
offended.
We don't believe it?
I was offended to be told that the pastor doesn't believe what I had to stand up and say every Sunday.
Right.
And I became an atheist or agnostic or whatever I was until I was converted. But dear ones, if you're hearing this, panentheism rejects the most fundamental truths about God, Christ, God's relationship to the universe, the fall, sin, redemption, the end times, final judgment, all of that goes out the window and is replaced with a pagan worldview that's grounded in God being part of the whole creation and tied up within the creation as part of it.
And that's why it's compatible with Buddhism,
right,
and is promoted by Oprah or Eckhart Tolle or all of these people who we would not consider to be Christians. That it there's no offense to them. There's
no.
They've removed the offense of the gospel.
Yep. That's why it's coming into these evangelical universities, because the children of Christians aren't necessarily Christian.
No, but you would hope that the teachers within the Christian colleges would be.
Well, there we've gone just a couple generations, and things happen more quickly now.
Yeah.
Because of modern communications.
Right.
It used to take decades or even centuries for apostasy to become the key.
Right.
In other words, there were big educational institutions that kept teaching Christian doctrine for a long, long, long time before they became apostate.
Right.
Now it only takes about 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah. So really one generation. You establish it, and within a generation or two, there's always the possibility that it's just gone liberal. And panentheism is the liberalism of
today. That is what you're going to hear. So if the leadership of your college or university, we saw it come into liberty.
Yep.
And they were all into it. I watched the video. Liberty University, panentheist?
Right.
Well, maybe they said, some people out there would say, oh, we don't believe that. Well, then why do you have these people teaching you in convocation for the whole school?
Right. If you don't believe it.
Obviously, nobody has enough discernment to see where this is coming from.
Right.
So if you want all that money from Christians to send their kids there, you better get a clue about what's being taught to those kids.
Yep.
Northwestern University right here in the Twin Cities brought this stuff in. That's how we're doing this.
Yeah.
Because we got a call. What's going on at this place? One of their top people, this Nina Barnes, Dean of Spiritual Formation. Well, right there, you know there's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a pagan replacement for sanctification.
Right.
It's bringing this in, endorsing this pagan book. I wouldn't pay one penny to have my kids taught by these pagans.
Right.
If they got to go listen to pagans, go to any secular university, at least you know what you're getting.
Exactly.
I don't get it. I don't, honestly, why would anybody allow this stuff to come in to something supposedly evangelical?
Well, and we, as parents, I'm a parent of a child who recently graduated from college, and I have two more still growing up. As a parent, I feel like we have the obligation to find out what is going on in these colleges. And years ago, we had a speaker at our church who recommended that parents get the books of the professors at whatever college you're going to send your students to and read them. If you want to know what the professors
right.
believe, read their books.
Well, just so you know, maybe you're saying, well, listen, you're talking about how bad this is, but you haven't improved it. Let me just hear as we're running out of time here.
Okay.
This here is the sacred enneagram. There's a problem.
Yeah. Well, so they're claiming it's spiritual.
Yeah, they're claiming
sacred,
it's sacred.
That's a spiritual claim.
In Timothy, the scriptures are called sacred.
Right.
Okay. This is Hurwitz, endorsed by somebody from Northwestern University here in Minnesota.
Yes.
The Twin Cities. Here is what he is saying, page 63 of his book. As noted earlier, we've seen rapid evolution in human consciousness. And people are experiencing their middle passage, the Jungian term, which is often colloquially referred to as a midlife crisis, earlier and in more frequently than in past generations. As people come into deeper awareness of self at younger ages or bump around the bottom of life, making tragic and painful mistakes earlier in life, they seem to be capable of discerning their type. That's the number on this. There's nine numbers on this circle, okay?
Okay.
Of Enneagram, beginning your journey home. So home for Hurwitz is the pristine inner self, which is a rejection of the doctrine of the fall.
Right.
Okay. Here is from the page 73 of the same book. At the root of nearly every decision we make in life is the desire to find our way home. Back to our essential nature, our true self, capitalized, and back to God.
Wow.
The true self is home.
Wow.
And according to the Bible, the old self is dead.
This should be stunning. This should be stunning to any born-again Christian.
I just opened this up before Jessica got here and looked for a few citations I don't have in my paper, and I found those two in about 3 minutes.
Wow.
All right. I would challenge any evangelical theologian to call me, email me, and try to prove to me that this Christopher L. Hurwitz, with his pristine inner self and evolution of human consciousness, is truly an evangelical Christian, and that his teaching ought to be used in colleges and seminaries.
Wow.
I want to hear it. Who wants to debate? Mr. Hurwitz, you come and I'll debate you publicly. And I'll prove that you're not in fact, he doesn't even claim to be evangelical. He has stories about what he didn't like about it when he was a kid.
Okay.
And some of the dumb rules that Christians had back then. So that was a good reason to go into this other realm.
Yet evangelical churches are bringing his program into their small groups in Sunday schools.
It's not Christian. As I read these three books, I thought, if I believed that, I would just be an engineer. I wouldn't waste my time. I mean, a non-religious engineer. That's what
right.
I was going to do when I decided the church didn't even believe what they claimed to believe. I was just going to be an engineer and be happy. Don't go to church. Why are you wasting your time, Mr. Rohr, Mr. Hurwitz, and Mr. Crown? Why are you wasting your time being religious and bringing this garbage to unsuspecting people? What are you doing? What motivates you? Why don't you go do something in objective reality with things? Fix cars, invent a new computer, do something. Leave our kids alone. This is wicked.
Amen. All right. Why don't you give us a good wrap up here?
Well, next week we're going to get in to the sources of Enneagram. And they themselves are saying that it comes from occult sources, which to them, it's a good thing. That's a good thing. We'll show you that and we'll prove it.
Okay.
We're out of time for this edition of Critical Issues Commentary Radio. We want to remind you that you can access this program at our website at cicministry.org. We want to remind you of Philippians 1:27, stand firm in one spirit, with one mind, and strive together for the faith of the gospel.